Well, thank you so much, Benito. We're back. We've got the boys in studio. Martin, thank you for gracing us with your presence once again. Great having you here. We've got Dylan Jack from SA Rugby Magazine. Guys, a weekend of ifs and buts.
Before we start, you know, radio is theater of the mind.
Mm.
As a host whose first language is Afrikaans, you've got a hell of a t-shirt on there. Just stand up. The Ramones, that's a quality band. Do you know the song Howling at the Moon by the Ramones?
You want to sing me a little bit?
No, 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 I certainly don't, because I'm I'm going to be howling at the Springboks. So Dylan, calm me down before I get stuck in. I've nicknamed Ninaba Moby. Go and have a look at the singer Moby and then put a picture up of Jacques Ninaba and look at the two of them. One is it has rugby intelligence, and the other one I'm not quite sure. But Moby, the other one, yeah, you've got it. Well done, Mr. Ramones, you've got it.
I love Jacques Ninaber, my man. Just give him a year or two. He's gonna.
No, there's a World Cup next year. This time, Dylan, calm me down. But I'm gonna throw open the opening salvo. It's a six straight over point. No more Dwayne Vermeulen. No more France Steyn. No more Jesse Creel. They must sit on the sidelines, retire, or go and do something. But when Dwayne Vermeulen came on, all he thought he was a Sherman tank and just sort of ran into the nearest player. I mean, that's not rugby when you've got to score a points differential of 39 points. Calm me down, please.
Well, by then, the game was almost already, the result was almost already done and dusted. It looked like the box, by the time Vermeulen had come on, the chances of the box actually getting what they needed had already dissipated, because it was just a mess of a game. Mm. And we saw that, and you know, man, and you could look at maybe one man as a reason for that, and that was the man with the whistle.
He was appalling.
Yeah, 39 penalties.
Yeah, we needed to win by 39 points. I think the ref wanted in on that action.
Yes, yeah. 39 penalties, 6 yellow cards. You can't have a test match in those conditions, unfortunately.
No, it was like an NFL game.
Yes, yeah, yes. In terms of Frans Steyn and Jesse Creel, I think Jesse Creel has actually done an admirable job of filling in for Lacanyo Am. He's been solid as a flippin' brick, I think. I think Frans Steyn, unfortunately, was thrown in at 10, and that was the first time I've seen Frans Steyn looking nervous, like looking actually nervous and frazzled in his whole test career. I don't think I've seen Frans Steyn that sort of nervy and sort of making silly errors and things like that. But I still think he's a quality player to have in the squad. He's still quality for his experience. We don't have as straight up talented a backline player as Frans Steyn in this box.
Well, he can kick from the halfway line. Yes. That's an absolute given.
Yeah.
You know, you must remember, listeners, when we're criticizing, we're not criticizing the player as a person. We're criticizing their job and what they do.
It's from a place of love.
Yeah, no, absolutely it is. And frustration too, because he didn't pick himself at fly off. My question at the end of year tour, and I'm going to put it out there now, it's a mini World Cup. They're going to lose 3 games. They're playing Ireland, France, and England in consecutive order. If Ireland have a warm-up game, and that's not at the pub with a Guinness, if they have a proper warm-up game, they could certainly whack South Africa. France, it's the World Cup for them to lose. And England, we're going to touch on that. He's been running around with the seals, Eddie Jones, or as I call him, Eddie Moans. And that's a fascinating discussion to have. But seriously, do we take the likes of the Ulrich Lowes? Do we take the likes of the Evan Roerses? Who's our third fly-off? Because Elton is either at a guest house or on an aeroplane. I think his days are over.
Well, that's the million rand question at the moment.
Dollars. He's in Japan, eh? Dollars. Yen.
But for this test match, was that the opportunity for Jacques Ninaber to bring in Amani Leboka?
No, I don't think it was, because the box only arrived from Argentina on the Monday. You bring in a guy like Amani Leboka. You give him, 2 days to train and learn an entirely new way to play with the Springboks. Remember the Springboks?
No, all they needed to do was pass the ball down the back line and score twice. No, it's very difficult.
You're throwing Marnie Lubbock there in the deep end. You really, really are. You throw Marnie Lubbock into backline players he's never played alongside.
100%.
You're throwing Marnie Lubbock into a test match arena when he's had, 2 training sessions with the team he's going to be playing alongside. Yeah. That's completely unfair, I think, to expect.
Yeah.
More fair would be to bring him along on the end of your tour. I think Marnie Lubbock is in probably the form of his career. No, definitely in the form of his career. Kicking, his goal kicking has been excellent. His kicking out of hand, tactical kicking has been excellent. His playmaking has been excellent. I think you bring him and Jan Huissen on tour.
Who do you put that down to? Mani Lubbock suddenly developing this complete wonderful look.
That's down to both himself and the Stormers coaches, I think. I think believing in himself, him wanting to better himself, because he could have easily thrown it in after the Sharks. He could have gone and said, you know what, I'm just going to go overseas. I'm going to go and play in the French second division. I'm going to see what I can eke out of my career. But no, he said, I'm going to the Stormers. I'm going to go to this team. I know this coach, these coaches have sold me something. I want to believe in this plan. And he believed in himself. And the coaches as well at the Stormers believed in him and have empowered him to sort of better his game.
Yeah, the Stormers have made a habit of taking players from different, struggling players from other unions and then turning them into this diamond, I want to say. But geez, how good they look this weekend. Carried themselves. Yeah. Like real champions.
Evan Roos throughout.
3 minutes in. What a stat. Just vindicating everybody that's been yelling his name for the past 2 months. Yeah. Fantastic.
Because, I mean, that Irish side that was here had a couple of serious internationals in them. The one who did the red card nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all over the All Blacks earlier this year. And he was part of that.
Yeah, he was.
Bandiaki.
Bandiaki and Mac Hansen, who Evan Roos shouldered off on his way to the try line.
Fantastic. But also, we expected jitters, like 10 minutes, 20 minutes for them to find their feet. But from the word go, they were immaculate. And Clayton Blomikis just seemed to have adapted so well.
I do think towards the end of the first half, there were a few little errors. They weren't necessarily perfect in Stellenbosch. There was a time where the crowd was sort of getting a bit irritable and sort of, you know. But then in the second
crowd
half,
crowd getting irritable and some of the media members taking selfies. What a joy.
But in the second half, they really sort of refocused, got it back in there. And we saw as soon as Aki went off, they just pounced on every error. They open the field up. Hachiva Diomani looks, Hachiva Diomani just looks on another level at the moment. He's just getting, the Stormers are sort of playing to his strengths in a way. They're letting him roam in the wider areas. They let him get ball in hand, which is the beautiful thing. And he's just using those opportunities so well.
Dylan, silly question. It's always been said rugby is a team sport. It's not an individual game. And You're mentioning names that don't sort of flash in lights, yet they all seem to combine incredibly well. Is that the ethos? I mean, you've been around Dobbo, I've been around Dobbo a lot and everything else. There's a wonderful saying, he's a mensch. Mm. And I think that's what applies to this team. They're not a bunch of superstars.
No.
The superstars got bought and went to the Sharks. We'll talk about that just now. But they just seem to be all pulling together and enjoying their rugby, and I think it's sometimes we tend to forget it. You know, I'm in my late 50s, and that these are kids.
Yeah.
These are 20, 21-year-old, 19-year-old, etc., and they're good enough to play, and they're shouldering responsibility, and they're manning up. Can they go all the way this year again? I mean, last year they were written off in the first few weeks. I was one of them who said, "Oh my heavens, here comes horrible Stormers," but they proved everybody wrong.
Yeah, I think what worries me this season with the Stormers is the number of games and the introduction of the European competition. I think those two things are going to have a big impact on how they perform this season. Obviously, they don't have the biggest amount of depth. What can come in handy for them is the fact that they do have a lot of junior box. Dobbo mentioned it last week. He mentioned the fact that they have had nine, I think, of the starting 15 that played in that game against Wales in under 20 summer series. So they do have that youthfulness coming through and those young superstars coming through. But the biggest problem, I think the biggest thing for the Stormers will be depth. If we've seen it this week, they've lost Sanatla. We don't know whether Glielin Zust is going to be coming through or not, coming in or not, how recovered he is from his injury. And they suddenly have a bit of an issue on the wing. So that's going to be the biggest test for them. But if they can keep their big name players fit, if they can keep everyone on the field, I don't see any reason why they can't go and put in a reasonable defense of their title.
But I mean, Zian, a question to both of you. Has there been scientific studies done as to how much rugby in a season can you play? and what the recovery time is needed. I mean, the conditions are absolutely enormous. Then there's the traveling to Europe. Yes, we know they turn left and they lie on a bed and they sleep. But still, it's all of that and then the mental pressure that goes with it. So this week, do you bring back the kits-offs and everything else to play at DHL Stadium? Or you say, guys, hang on, there's 2 weeks off. Because these guys bugger off in November to go on a mini World Cup.
Yeah.
Let's remind listeners, it's Ireland, France, I think it's England, and then Italy.
Yeah.
And Italy beat Wales.
Yeah.
So there are no givens anymore in Europe. So how do you manage that? Have you seen any documentation? I mean, you've been writing at length.
I haven't necessarily seen any official studies conducted into it, but it is a concern. The fact that the Springboks or South African rugby is effectively playing in two hemispheres. They're playing their test rugby in the southern hemisphere and their club rugby in the northern hemisphere. And at the moment, the fact that there isn't a global season means that players are almost playing nonstop. The top level players are almost playing nonstop. There is no off season and there is no preseason, and that's very, very. There have been studies, obviously, conducted to how important and often a preseason is. Off-season to letting the players just recover from their knocks, recover from everything, and preseason for preparing their body for what's to come.
Yeah.
The both of those are very, very important.
Yeah, and also when players get rested, fans criticize the coaches for why aren't these players playing?
Yeah.
But I think we're hitting about 365 days since the start of the last URC campaign, and the guys that's been with the Marks have been playing year-round now.
Yeah, and in terms of the who do you bring back, I think the top level Springboks, the starting Springboks, guys like Kitsoff and Mahab, you're probably going to still have to rest a little bit after the Rugby Championship, but there are guys who you can bring in. There is like a Joseph Dweba who you can bring in. I think he's going to be desperate for action. He's going to be hungry. He wants to play. He's going to want to prove himself that, listen, I'm still a contender for this Springbok, and he needs games because he hasn't played. He started a couple of games in the Rugby Championship but was taken off early, obviously. So he's going to be hungry. He's going to be want to prove himself. So I think he's one possible player the Stormers could bring in.
Do you play Damian Willem, sir?
I think I do. If he's recovered from his concussion, I think the Stormers actually they're losing numbers in their backline. So I think he's also another player who you kind of have to consider at this point.
You at least put him on the bench.
Yeah. And
give him like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But I think having those guys around in the training camps in Bellville at the NPC, I think is equally as important.
It is.
You know, not having them sit at home doing whatever. Bring a Frans Malhaber in. Okay, I'm going to coach the under 20. I'm going to show you this today, and this is what we're going to do for the week, etc. Yeah. And I think Dobbo is really good at that because, as we mentioned earlier, it's not a name of megastars.
No.
The megastars are with the Sharks. I mean, my query to both of you is a guy like Peter Steff de Toy. He looked horribly off form and almost overweight in inverted commas. Yeah. How much game time is he actually going to play with the Sharks? They go on the end of year tour, etc. They paid, I believe, north of 10 bar for him. You know, that's significant money. You know, how much game time is the likes of Asiya Kolisi going to get? They've got a problem at fly-off at the moment. All their fly-offs are falling over.
In terms of Kolisi, that's also a very good point because obviously he's played a heck of a lot of rugby during the Rugby Championship. And as the Bok cap, the point is that the Sharks are currently overseas and they've already got their squad that's overseas. And I don't think any of the Springboks are going to be joining them overseas. They've already named their squad for the couple games that they have left in October that they're going to be playing overseas in October. So I don't think any of the Springboks, the top level Springboks, will be joining them. They'll probably leave them in Durban and wait or bring them in during December probably. But that they've got their squad, so I don't think any of the top-level Springboks like Kolisi are going to be joining the Sharks, so that's already sort of a given, I think.
And the Bulls?
Bulls have already, well, Jake White's wasted no time, and they've been heavily hinting at the fact that Kanan's going to be brought in, Kirtley's going to be brought in, they already brought Ulrich Lowe in. So Jake White's wasted no time. And I mean, to be fair, Kanan and Kirtley, they played a handful of games and they're still very young men, so they can handle it.
Yeah, Kirtley just finished off his little, straftaki.
Yeah.
For that horrible incident with Bowden. But
look, the wings in South African rugby don't seem to get much ball when you become a Springbok. It's, Yeah, kick the thing.
Yeah, and that's just going back to this game this weekend. We're chasing 39 points, but how many times did the ball actually end up in the wing?
I think the problem that the Bucks had with this Argentina game was the first step, they went about it the wrong way. I think the first thing that they had to do was build scoreboard pressure. And they tried to do that by doing the obvious, which is to go for more, go for a try. And Argentina were prepared for that. They knew what was coming. They knew that let's just slaughter the Springboks more and sort of shut. Although the Springboks did score a couple from there. What the Springboks should have done, build scoreboard pressure. Suddenly Argentina find themselves 12-0, 15-0 down. And Argentina start playing the risky rugby. And from there, you can just slaughter them. You can find gaps. You can force them into errors. Yeah. And that was the big problem with how the Springboks went about it.
Is Michael Checker a nice, shrewd coach?
I think he is.
He looks...
He seems that
a really nice guy to have a beer with. I think you get a hell of a lot of stories. Mm. Is he the right guy for that Latin temperament and flair to hold that team together? Because you see the passion in the anthem and everything else. And it was chalk and cheese the first half and the second half. They did really well in the second half.
Yeah.
Argentina.
Yeah. It was the same in Buenos Aires, funny enough, is that this, it followed a similar pattern. Like the Springboks scored a couple of tries in the first half. It looked like they were building a bit of a lead. And then Argentina hit back just before half time. And then they come out firing, in the second half. And suddenly the second half is very, very competitive until the Springboks score late on and take the game away from there. It was basically the same game that we saw in Buenos Aires. Yeah. So I think the big problem that Chick has is just getting his side to start a little bit better. But he seems to have found this sort of resonance with the Argentina team that maybe he didn't quite find with the Wallabies.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with the passion. If they don't spark, they're just not there.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the Wobblies?
We can talk about the Wobblies in a bit. But a lot's been said about the refereeing. I mean, Dylan, you in your opening statement, you spoke about Meneer Murphy and his willingness to play Texas Hold'em, but and you guys had a poll on SA Rugby Magazine's website asking the readers to rate Mr. Damon Murphy's performance, and 52% rating him poor, 33 below par. Guys, do we have an issue? Do we have a problem? The World Cup is less than a year away.
It's on a year from now while we're talking. Are the rules to me are too complicated. Mm-hmm. I always look at it, you're sitting with your girlfriend or your wife or your young son and you're trying to explain the game to him. Soccer is very simple. Don't touch the ball and kick it in the back of the net. That's basically soccer. Mm-hmm. Rugby, I didn't know this one's collapsing, the knee's overextended. There's old Hanyani Shimange explaining, no, the knee's overextended and he's moving him to the left, so it's a penalty. That's an absolute lottery in the front row. There's certain rules that should be absolutely scrapped. Yeah. We know that you need to come in from behind the eighth man's feet or the last person with the ruck.
Through the gate.
Yeah. But what was that? What was it, a yellow card for Eben Etzebeth?
Yeah, that
bizarre.
Yeah, it was. It was very bizarre. It was that's a whole incident that we could spend about 10 or 15 minutes in itself discussing because it was just a really, really weird call. But yeah, I agree with Martin is that the laws are very, very complicated at this point in time. And it just makes the referee's job so much harder that they have to police offsides while policing a scrum, while keeping an eye on what the scrummers are doing, while looking at, it's just, there's too much for the referee to do at the moment.
And in the speed of test match rugby, the speed test match rugby is being played in, it's extremely difficult because it's supposed to be rugby laws and not rugby interpretations.
Yes,
Do we look at bringing in a VAR type, using the TMO a lot more?
I think the TMO is overused, in fact. I do. Yeah. I think there's far
also,
too...
it's a referee long, and it's up to his interpretation.
Far too long is being spent on you sitting, having games go on first halves, instead of going on for 40 minutes, they're going on for 52, 55 minutes because minutes are being wasted on checking again one incident with the TMO and then another incident with the TMO.
All you should allow the TMO to come into play is the moment the ball's in the 22 area.
Yeah.
And each captain should have two, I'm going to query this.
The white card.
You know? Oh, that's a penalty. No, I want to query it to stop it because you might kick 3 points or kick to the corner, etc. Mm. And if you get it right and it gets overturned, you have that. So instead of two referrals in the second half. You've now got three in the second half. So you're going to use that very judiciously. But I mean, to go back and see when the bloomin' forward pass happened on the halfway line and the grand ran 50 meters and ran through half a team is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And is it so important to worry about the slight forward pass? Oh, it's coming out of the hand and the hand looks like it said it went this way or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that was the issue with this past weekend is keeping the game flowing.
Yeah.
Because rugby needs to flow. That's the difference between rugby and NFL.
So, hang on. Whoa. You hit a point there. Yeah. Difference between NFL. Why did you, Zion, like rugby when you started following rugby? Because all three of us are incredibly passionate. Some of you make a living out of it. I fell in love with rugby because I wanted to see people score tries. The winger score the try. The ball go down the back line, passing out the back of the hand, etc. Zion, yourself?
It was seeing Brayton Porter run over in the corner and then doing a backflip. That was that sparked my love for the Stormers. And that's what you want to see. You want to see the five-pointers.
And Dylan, yourself? Yeah, I mean, you're writing it. Yeah. You're engaged in it on a daily basis. Yeah. Why did you fall in love with the game?
Yes, it was a mix between the brutality, sort of the big forward sort of carrying it up, but also the skill of it as well. There was a bit of a beauty that it was a game for everyone and that it was a flowing game and that everyone could take part in it. It wasn't like a sort of a soccer where you have to be a certain build or something like that, to play it. There was a beauty with how the sort of the shorter squatters players could still pull off ridiculous tricks and things like that. It was just,
And are you becoming irritated with world rugby and some of these rules?
It is frustrating. Again, it's the same thing as we've said. First halves are going on for sort of 60 minutes. Second halves going on for just about as long. Games lasting about 2 hours when they should only be an hour and a half. It's just, it's far too much.
Yeah. So do we keep the game flowing? So there's a marginal forward pass or marginal offside. You keep the game flowing. Let the TMO look at what happened and then bring the guys back. Like, if you're unsure, in football, if the referee is unsure that the player was offside, keeps the game flowing, see what would have happened, and then check if the man was actually offside.
Absolutely. Mm. You have to. Yeah. How are you going to build the game? We are not the audience. We are over 50. We're in it already.
Yeah, we're
so how do you get the 8, 9, 10-year-old who wants to go with mom or dad to the rugby and everything else? How do you get those people involved in the look? No, I'm going to rather play soccer or cricket. It's much easier to understand. Yeah, it's incredibly difficult.
The people that went to the Sevens World Cup that don't follow rugby but fell in love with the game or sparked a little something within themselves – now want to follow, and they're seeing the game go on for 2 hours, and it's a drab.
Yeah.
It also seems to be so long. Walk into the line-out. Walk out of the line-out. Okay, we're tired. Prop has to go down. That's a trick all over the world.
Yeah. Prop goes down. Blood capsule
get someone,
in your mouth.
Get someone come on. Let's talk. Let's take another scrum, etc. Yeah. You know, if the scrum collapses twice, turn it around and say, okay, we're now going to have a line out at exactly this point. Change it up. I mean, we've seen some scrums take place for over 4 or 5 minutes and nothing has happened.
And the time
should be off till they've actually engaged.
Till
the
referee
goes
engaged,
in and then turn it on because you can do some lovely time wasting.
Yeah.
So do we stop the clock when the referee blows his whistle and start it when he says engage?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, when the ball goes in, start it. You can get it that accurate. Yeah.
Exactly.
One bright light is the fact that Nigel Owens, whom you guys know I love.
We all love.
Well, I've just been more vocal about it. He's joined the ranks of the URC. He's going to try and fix whatever's happening over there. Is that a starting point for the World Cup things getting a little bit better?
I don't know, because he has a role in the URC, and his role is to select the best referees, and that could have a positive impact as those referees could go on and referee in Test rugby. But the problem with Test rugby at the moment lies with World rugby. It doesn't lie with necessarily. I love that Nigel Owens is back in the URC and that he's going to be helping these referees and that he's going to be selecting the panel. He's going to be doing reviews with the referees in the URC, and that could only make them better, in all honesty. But the problem with Test rugby lies with World rugby. They need to take the corrective steps to make this better.
Yeah. Do we issue refereeing license, give them points? And
I don't know how
we take points off their license.
They're supposed to be undergoing reviews, but I don't know how strictly that's done in SA Rugby anymore with the SA Rugby referees, and I don't know how strictly that's done with the World Rugby referees, because they're meant to be going after every performance. They undergo review with the referees boss, and they find out what calls they made correctly and what were wrong. But you know,
yeah, what's Tapa doing?
Chilling.
Enjoying the
listening to the Ramones. What's on your T-shirt again?
It's the Ramones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listening to the Ramones.
But
I want to go back because I wasn't here 2 weeks ago. Yeah. That poor old Quinn Tupaia, who plays for the All Blacks. Yeah. He ain't playing till early next year. Mm. That Australian chap, the Wobblies, the sanction. I think he was sanctioned for like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, six games. 6 weeks.
That's bizarre.
It is. And you don't want to see that sort of act on the field. It was, I don't know whether it was intentional or not, but it was certainly a stupid act of foul play. And it was just, it was ridiculous. And for Swain to only get 6 weeks when Tupaia, now here's one of the problems with giving, with the statement saying that, Swain should have been banned for as long as Tupaia is out, is that what happened if Tupaia hadn't suffered as bad an injury as he did? That means that Swain does the same action and Tupaia is only out for 2 weeks, so should Swain only have gotten 2 weeks, for example? That's just one problem with saying that Swain should have been banned for as long, but he should have received a lengthy ban regardless. That's the point that I'm making, is that Swain should have received a lengthy ban for 7 or 8 weeks, 9 weeks maybe, because he's basically just ruined Tupaia's chances of going to the World Cup next year. And that's a career-changing injury that Tupaia, it's all his ligaments are gone. It's difficult for an athlete to get anywhere back to where you were after suffering that kind of injury.
Yeah,
absolutely. The Wobblies, we mentioned them earlier. Are they wobbly?
Extreme.
You know, let's leave out Eden Park, because the All Blacks don't lose at Eden Park.
No, but even counting that game, what was their plan for that game? Yeah. You know, what was their plan?
Let's ruin the Springboks.
Yeah. they didn't look like a team that necessarily was playing with any sort of motivation or direction. This should have been their chance to hit back, to say to the All Blacks, listen, we can beat you at Eden Park. We can do this. And they just looked they looked without any energy. They didn't look like a team that was determined to make a point. They didn't look like a team with a plan. Koro Betty and Tom Wright had some of the worst games I've seen from wings recently. I mean, it was just appalling.
Are they going to be able to rise up on the end-of-year tour? Because the All Blacks have a relatively easy end-of-year tour, and this could all of a sudden turn them back into form. They're going to Japan for obvious reasons, because a lot of their players play there, and it's close in the time zone, and it works. Their big game is against England at the end of year, and I think the Box play them the week before. So, you know, England might be a bit soft. But Eddie has got tricks up his sleeve. Yeah. You said, Zion, before we came on air, and then Dylan, you said it as well. No, my dark horse is England for the World Cup. Can you elaborate, please? I know Eddie's been running around with the elite seals.
Yeah, not
that America.
Seal. Not the,
no, proper seals.
Not our seals.
Proper seals.
Not the Cape Town seals.
Yeah. Not the Cork Bay seals. Feed me.
Yeah, I think, as you said, Eddie Jones is still a mastermind coach. He's still, and I think he's been quite quiet, which concerns me a little bit, how quiet. This is the first sort of weirdly outlandish thing he said recently. And when Eddie Jones goes quiet, it worries me a little bit, because that means he's working on something. He's concocting something. He has a plan. They went over to Australia and they got a series win against Australia. And that's no mean feat to beat Australia and sort of two tests there.
Well, he's secure of a job.
Yeah.
They are the most well-resourced rugby nation
on
the planet.
To be honest, that too, they are the most well-resourced rugby nation on the planet. They should be challenging for the World Cup every single year. Tournament. They should be challenging, because, you know, nobody has as many player resources, as many clubs, as many semi-pro teams as England does. So they should be, technically. And you put Eddie Jones with that. You get him He's now starting to bring through a lot of their young stars. He's getting rid of the players that were underperforming previously. So he's building something there. And plus, the fact that he's on the easier side of the draw. He's not on the side of the draw with Ireland and the Springboks and New Zealand and France. He can avoid all of those. He's on the side of the draw with sort of Australia, who he's got a home series win over. So I think England are definitely dark horses for that.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen because if it's not the Bucks winning the World Cup, I want a different name on that trophy.
Who do you want on that trophy?
Well, if it's not us, Argentina.
No, that's not going to happen. Be realistic here. You're not dealing with Messi, for goodness sake.
France, it's in their hands. I would love to see Ireland win a World Cup.
It's France to lose, but now that you've been so clinical, Dylan, with your assessment of Eddie Moans, as I love to call him, I'm going to have a look and have a little wager. They will be in the final from your confident prediction.
At least semifinals. If you can get to the semifinals, anything can happen in knockout rugby. It depends on how the referee blows the game. Anything can happen. And as soon as you get to that semifinal phase, you can... We saw no one backed England to hammer that All Blacks team in the way that they did in 2019, but they did that. And no one was giving the Springboks a chance in the final.
I made merry on that final. It was 3-1. Yeah. That's how one-sided it was, that England were going to romp over. Yeah. And I turned around to my mates and I said, there's no chance. Yeah. England are not repeating this again. Yeah, that was their final against the All Blacks. Eddie has got something against the All Blacks because of the history coach Australia and everything else, and there's a lovely rivalry there, and that was it, and the box were sublime. Next week we could talk at length again. Those old men must stay at home.
Gents, just reflecting on the rugby championship in the greater scheme of things, who do you think came out with more?
Argentina.
I think in terms of squad development, you've got to go with Argentina. I think this is the first time that they've really put in like almost a proper challenge. They would have been very disappointed to lose at home against the Springboks. That would have been very tough for Michael Checker. That was a game that he was clearly targeting. Let's get if Argentina win this, then that's, that could set them up for a title challenge. But after they had lost that was sort of their title challenge over. And they didn't really play with much conviction in Durban, as we saw. But I still think Argentina, they got a lot out of this in terms of squad development, in terms of we know now that Michael Checker's actually got something going with that team.
We don't understand how big it is to win in New Zealand. Yeah. We just don't. Yeah. I mean, it's like... It's the incredible. Biggest disappointment for me was the box at Ellis Park. Yeah. I was screaming blue murder at the TV.
Because that was the game as well.
No, but I've been around the All Blacks long enough to know. If you're an All Black supporter, you know the games that you've lost. You don't know the games that you've won. You don't remember that. And they had a golden opportunity to smash them, like they did in Bloemfontein in 2009. It was Bloemfontein and then it was Durban in the following weekend. That side was utter SH1T. In a dark hole, in a dark place, at your fortress, with a rabid, screaming South African population supporting you, you put up that performance.
That was where the rugby championship was won and lost. The Box can look at the week after against Sydney, but the fact that they didn't only lose to the All Blacks at Ellis Park, but they gave them two tries in the last sort of 5 or 6 minutes and allowed them to get a bonus point. That was just golden. That was for an All Blacks team that Ian Foster was looking like he was sacked. The players looked like they had lost interest. That was, as Martin says, it was a golden opportunity for the Box themselves to get a bonus point when I don't know if they'll ever get a better opportunity to do so.
Yeah. It's going to take us probably 10 years for them to wait for a side to be that bad. And there are not many bad All Black sides, and that was abysmal.
Yeah.
And they blew it.
Just your feeling on this format.
I actually did enjoy it. I thought that it made for a bit of a refreshing change from the constant same fixtures that we had gotten used to, like the Springboks starting against Argentina, then they go away to Argentina, then they're in Australia, then they're in New Zealand, and then they're back home. It made for a bit of a... It was nice to have the All Blacks in two tests in South Africa. You know?
But obviously now we got them in two tests away.
But that's also going to be fun because you're actually seeing the Springboks going on almost a... It's almost like a mini tour, as you say, to New Zealand against the All Blacks. It almost goes back to sort of the 2000s or the 90s, sort of. It gives you that kind of a feeling.
Early 1900s.
Yeah. I'm going to throw something out. I'd love to see it being hosted in one country. So this year's tournament, all the games were hosted in South Africa at different stadia around the country. So you had the All Blacks playing Argentina in Ellis Park. You had Australia playing South Africa the following week in PE, etc. You work it out that way. Then you move it to Argentina and then you move it to give supporters something more. You know, I would love to see Argentina and go on a tour to Argentina and hang on, this week I can see this, then I can see Australia versus Australia versus the All Blacks in Buenos Aires or somewhere else.
In a World Cup year, that would work perfectly when it's a single round competition. That's brilliant. I can get on board with that.
You know, I think some of the out-the-box thinking needs to happen to grow the game. And then what about having the opportunity to take your B team or your South African A or Australian A and New Zealand A and Argentina A to go with as well.
Yeah.
So if the Boks are playing the All Blacks, the opening game to that is
the A teams.
The A teams.
Yeah.
To give these guys, so we're not sitting here shouting and screaming, oh, Ulrich Lowe must be there, Ivan Roos must be there, what about Clayton Blommekies? Well, you've got them in the A side.
Yeah.
They're in that culture.
Yeah.
Of Springbok culture or All Black culture and know what is happening.
Well, that's going to happen on the end-of-year tour. Yeah. There's midweek games. It's going to be really exciting. But just the objectives now going to this end-of-year tour. Do you now rest your big guys? Do you take along the younger guys to perform, especially that game in Marseille against France, for them to kind of get a feel of condition, see how they go up there?
The feeling that I'm getting from the Springboks right is they're not going to do that. They're not going to take it.
They're going to pick Jessica.
Sorry, Martin. But yes, they're going to take a 40-man squad. It's going to be a massive.
What position are you playing, Dylan? Where do you fit in?
Outside center.
Yeah.
That's a couple of hotel floors.
Yeah.
Well, wing, then you'll never get
get the ball.
No, guys, I don't know. I don't agree with Martin saying
that. No, hold on.
Lose that and these three.
I think they're going to target two games, the two big ones.
Yeah.
France and England. Because as I always say, the Anglo-Boer War was not a long time ago. I always use that statement when they play. And there's a love-hate relationship with Eddie Mones. Remember, Eddie came and was coaching the Stormers for, I think, 10 minutes. What did he call it? Tabletop Mountain.
Yes.
You know, and I've had a go at Eddie at a press conference at the Vineyard where he told me I read too much. He's good value.
Yeah.
He really he is good value in a media conference and everything else. He's incredibly bright and astute. And Twickenham is the home of rugby. And I think the Boks are going to target that. Because remember, at the previous end of your tour, we all thought the Boks were going to walk them.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up short. There's, how can I say, a lot of needle.
Yeah.
You know, Russi wants to get one over him because, am I correct, Russi does come back. He's out of his...
Yes,
he
is.
Out of hiding.
He's out of the dog box.
Yeah. He's out of Ward Rugby's dog box.
Is that going to just add something else to the Springbok group as well? Jock Nino, but having Russi there in the stadium to kind of lean on.
Yeah, I hope so, especially in terms of his substitution policy, because that's one of the big issues that I personally have with I've seen with Ninoba. Sometimes he doesn't get his substitutions quite right. Mm. He's sometimes bringing on weird combinations of players, sometimes bringing on players at wrong time.
Yeah.
Hopefully having Russi there at the stadium, maybe on the sidelines doing water boy duty again.
Yeah, he's going to have the bottles
if he
again.
Dares. I think that might help in terms of that.
Does Ninoba almost become assisted to him and Russi sort of calls the shots a little bit more? I mean, we see it with the great English football side. You look at Pep Guardiola, there's his right-hand man right there, and you sometimes wonder who's calling the shots more. You'll never know because they keep it very, very tight.
Well,
could that not happen in South African rugby? Because I think there is a comfort from the fans that Rassie is astute and just goes about his business really, really well.
Yeah, I think they've always had a partnership. But just in terms of Rassie, he's played there before. He played Test rugby. He's got all this experience. So I don't think he'll step on Jock's toes. But if Jock makes a call that Rassie doesn't believe in, or if he thinks he has a different way of going at it, he'll go, "Jockey, let's just 1 second, just think about this. Wouldn't it be better to rather do this? Let's not send Stephen Kitsoff on to chase a kickoff. Let's bring him on when there's a scrum."
No, very sage points.
Guys, URC, really quickly, just the Stormers game this past weekend. Just once again, do you see them carrying on this one? Edinburgh were absolutely fabulous in that first game. Yes, they played against the Dragons, totally clumped them, came really close at Loftus. So they might want to end off their time here in South Africa with some points of substance.
I was watching the quarterfinal, last season's quarterfinal between the Stormers and Edinburgh, earlier this morning, and it was a lot closer than, it ended 28-17, but it was a lot closer than what most people think. Yeah. Going back on that, and Stormers only really pulled out of that game in the last 10 minutes. Edinburgh are a very, very good team. Make no mistake, they've got Safa Pack there. They've got Pierre Schumann. They've got, I think, Via Pianell's there. They've got a very, very strong pack that did match the Bulls at Loftus Versfeld. That's no easy thing to do. Yeah. They've got a deadly wing in Darcy Graham, scored a hat-trick in that game. Very, very good. So I think that the Stormers need to be on their toes for this one, because this could be a potential banana peel for them.
Do you do anything else but do rugby? Your preparation is unsurpassed today. You just roll off the names. You should be a commentator. Do you read anything else besides rugby?
Gents, we've got big URC games. Do we foresee another South African whitewash?
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully. I think the Sharks could get one. I think the Bulls are going to be tested. But the Lions were, I think the Lions were the outstanding result from the last weekend, going away to Ospreys and getting that win. That was one of the standout results for me. Hopefully they can keep developing with that young team, because they have some good young players coming through there.
I hope there's no load shedding on Saturday, because it's one little issue of Arsenal versus Tottenham Hotspurs and a remote that must work. Have a lovely week, people.
Early kickoff, 1:30.
Yeah.
Yes, because people get rowdy in North London.
Well, viva Arsenal. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, John.
Wear a hip shirt next week.
I'll wear my Arsenal jersey.
With that derogatory statement that you support Arsenal.
I'll wear my Arsenal jersey in celebration of the 3 points coming up.